Welcome back to Phantom Island, presented by Home Field Apparel. We're trying something a little different today. This is still a new show. We can try new things. We can be whatever we want to be. Namely, there's no Godfrey on this episode. It's me, Ryan Nanny, talking to our friend Roger Sherman, the proprietor of the excellent, excellent newsletter, Read Rog. You can find that at RogerSherman.substack.com. That's RogerSherman.substack.com to check out more of his excellent work. We're going to be talking about some fun developments in international soccer. And you can also sign up today for a membership for this very podcast and its many varieties of shows. You go to phantomisland.show to find that out. This show, the Phantom Island Diesel, as it were, remains free without any sort of subscription limitation. But our second episode every week, that's the one. That's behind a paywall. That's the one for paid members only. Again, you find that out over at phantomisland.show. But for now, we're going to talk to our buddy Raj. Roger Sherman, there's an item in the White House that has stuck out to you over the last couple of months. And I'm wondering if you could tell me what this item is and why it has attracted at least your attention.
Yeah, it's probably the least offensive thing happening in the seat of our government currently, but it's still something that caught my eye. It's just that the FIFA Club World Cup trophy has been sitting in the Oval Office at this point for almost 3 months. The FIFA Club World Cup trophy is new this year because they have expanded mm-hmm. the FIFA Club World Cup about 500% larger than it used to be, and they've changed the format entirely. And it's being hosted here in the United States. And I sort of knew that was happening, but I didn't really think about it until I kept seeing clips of, like, whatever awful thing Donald Trump was announcing from the Oval Office. Like, here's an executive order banning women.
Sure.
Or, like, sure. Or like giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom to, like...
Scar from the Lion King.
Yeah, or Hulk Hogan was who I was going to say, but like I feel like they both can get it. Anyway, anytime there's like a clip of that goes viral, like you look at the background and I'm like, man, that Club World Cup trophy is still there every single time. He received it I'm not sure if he received it, but the president of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, on March 7th, went to the White House to unveil the trophy. It hadn't been publicly seen before because it's a new trophy. It's really...
Can you describe this for people who haven't seen it?
Yeah. It's really golden. It's like it's like the exact aesthetic which people have made fun of Donald Trump for having, in that mm-hmm. it's just the brightest, shiniest gold possible. It seems like it's going to be logistically difficult for someone to lift up. It's like about 18 inches, like maybe 2 feet in diameter. It's a big series of golden circles. And when it was unveiled, the president of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, who I call Johnny Newborns, but nobody else does. So Johnny Newborn, he takes a key and he inserts it into the trophy and he unlocks it, and all of the golden circles like shift and they form a new shape. And
this, it's almost like an Indiana Jones plot device.
Yes, and it's been sitting in the White House. Behind the president, like he's got it in like prime position,
a
like
prominent
directly
spot.
Behind yeah. his desk, and like I think next to like pictures of his family, and it's in like the spot where like if you're like a college football head coach and someone on your team like went on to be like an NFL starting quarterback, you would have their jersey in
or
that
a
spot,
ball
yeah,
from
yeah,
them or something.
Like something
right.
like that
yep.
right behind them. And I've been thinking about it. And I don't think Donald Trump knows what it's a trophy for. Like, I think he knows that America is hosting the World Cup. I think he knows what the World Cup is, but I don't think that he knows that this is for some other tournament that everybody is making fun of around the world.
Okay, so let's pause there. Let's assume that our gentle listeners, while unlike Donald Trump in many respects, some may be asking the same question. Like, wait, what is this you're talking about? What is this tournament that is not the World Cup that we are all accustomed to or used to, you know, paying attention to when it rolls around? What is this?
Yeah, the Club World Cup, it's kind of gotten a lot of people. FIFA is trying to make it into the biggest club soccer tournament in the world. Right now, you would say that that's the UEFA Champions League with all the best teams in Europe, but FIFA wants a version of it that's like the World Cup in that it has teams from all over the planet, from North America, from South America, from Africa, Asia, and of course, don't forget about Oceania. But there's some weird aspects to it. One of them is that they kind of already had a tournament called the FIFA Club World Cup that has existed for over 20 years. It just had very little prominence. I've never really heard people hyping it up. It was a tournament that had six teams, one from every continent, the team that won each continent's Champions League, the Champions League in Europe, the Champions League in North America, the Champions League in South America, and they'd all go to a place and they'd play like two or three games, and the team from Europe would always win. I think Real Madrid has like four or five or seven trophies there. And that had gone on for a while. It wasn't really considered a big event. It was sort of a, you know, if we can squeeze in a couple of weeks, like 10 days to maybe send Real Madrid to Japan or the Persian Gulf to play a few games against these teams, they'd figure out how to do that. But FIFA decided literally 2 or 3 years ago that they were going to quintuple the size of this event. They were going to take it from six teams or seven teams to 32 teams. They were going to include dozens of teams from across the world. And that old event called the FIFA Club World Cup has kind of been transitioned into another event called the FIFA Intercontinental Cup, which they're going to give out the same trophy they used to give out for that at that event. And now the FIFA Club World Cup is a month long. It happens once every 4 years. It's got a huge, stupid trophy that you put behind the president and you unlock with a key.
Right. And it's also, I think, based on how you're describing it, it's a much more complicated thing to organize and to host. Like, the original Club World Cup you're talking about sounds a little bit like, well, I guess to use language that's easier for me to understand, this is the difference between we're having a 4-team playoff and we're having a 16-team playoff in college football.
Yeah, and I mean, having a tournament with teams from across the world is hard. You have to take the teams from across the world and put them in one place. And they already have a lot of things going on. One of the things we'll talk about as this goes on is that people just keep on adding more soccer games. Soccer is the most popular and valuable sport on earth. And, you know, the World Cup is expanding to have more teams. The Champions League is expanding to have more games. Everyone is trying to squeeze as much possible out of these players. And at the same time, FIFA has decided to invent a new month-long tournament, including all the best teams in the world.
So why, I'm stuck as to like why they decided this, because there was already a version of this that, I don't know, charitably, nobody cared about one way or the other. Like, maybe if it came to your town, it was like, oh, cool, I get to see a bunch of, like, top-flight-ish teams play one another, and the European team is going to win. What is sort of, like, who is asking for this? Who wants this to happen in this, like, bloated format that it's about to unfold into?
I would say pretty much one entity wants that, and that entity is FIFA. And
okay, great.
I will
I feel much better now.
Yes. I think the reason this is happening is you have to think about how FIFA works as an organization. It's like they've reverse engineered this. Just first of all, quick question about FIFA that I love asking people. Do you know what FIFA stands for? I think it's probably the most known acronym that very few people have, like, could, I bet, like,
can I ask spelling bee style question? Can I like it. Ask a clarifying question? Is the acronym in English or is it in a language other than English?
The acronym is in French, but okay. All of the words are English words, which is,
I'm going to guess it's something like Federation. I'm not going to do French. I'm not going to speak French here, but I'm going to do English.
Monsieur Nani, pourquoi pas? Jacques.
Zut alors. What is this? Okay. Federation International Football Association.
That is exact. Ding, 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 ding. I wasn't, I don't have a prize. I don't have a prize for you. It's okay, it's actually good. The technical name of soccer is association football. If you were to, yes, classify that in a genus category with rugby, football, and American football. And that is where the word soccer comes from. This is my fun fact for the day. Association, they like clipped it and took the sock part and made it into soccer. So anyway, great. That's what FIFA stands for. Follow-up question. How does FIFA make money?
I'm guessing by selling the television rights to the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and now possibly the Club World Cup.
I shouldn't have asked you questions without preparing prizes. You've answered.
Well, I can't think of any other way that they would make money.
You've answered my riddles too, and I had nothing for you.
That's okay. The sense of accomplishment is all I need.
Yes, but more specifically, they make money from one thing, which is the World Cup. It's right. The main thing is television rights, but you know, ticket sales, hospitality, sponsorships, that thing. But yeah, if you look, it's sort of like how the NCAA, two very similar organizations, when you break it down, makes something like 80-85% of its money just off of the TV rights to this one thing, the NCAA
to the men's tournament,
to the men's basketball tournament. They realized last year that they could also make money off of the women's tournament and stuff like that.
Which is a lot like FIFA in that regard too, of like this complete inability to economically realize what the women's side of this.
But it's also like, so the NCAA makes, like I said, it makes all of its money from this tournament played by these college sports teams. But when Ohio State plays Michigan in football, or Duke plays North Carolina in basketball, that money doesn't really make it back to the NCAA. That stays with those teams, those conferences. They sell the rights to that game individually. It's kind of the same thing with FIFA, in that soccer is the most popular sport on earth. When Real Madrid plays Barcelona in El Clasico, that money does not go back to them in any meaningful way. It goes with those teams. The only thing they really own are the World Cup, the Women's World Cup, some other things like the FIFA Club World Cup that used to exist. There's a Beach Soccer World Cup, which actually happened a couple weeks ago. But by and large,
who won the Beach Soccer World Cup? I'm sorry to interrupt.
It's Brazil, and it's one of the I looked at the highlights to see, like, what does beach soccer looks like? And literally the deciding goal of the Beach Soccer World Cup, a guy on Brazil shot it, and it bounced off a thing of sand in front of the goalie and deflected in an entirely different direction. And perfect. I was like, come on, that's exactly what I was hoping would happen.
Yeah, that's the platonic ideal of beach soccer.
So if according to the financial balance sheets that FIFA releases every year, they have 1 year where they make $7 billion, and they have 3 years where they lose money. You know, putting together other events. You know, I can't speak 1,000% to how the accounting of everything works, but by and large, if it's not the World's Cup, it's not something that they currently understand how to profit off of. They have this one big thing. So, how do you change that if you're FIFA? They proposed hosting the World Cup once every 2 years. That was angrily shot down by everybody in the world.
Why? Why was that an unpopular suggestion?
Well, the other confederations, like UEFA, the European Confederation, the CONCACAF, they host their own events in those off years.
Yeah.
So if you're doing the World Cup every 2 years, when are they going to do their thing? It's actually, to hammer home the point, UEFA actually, like, just on balance sheets is a more profitable organization than FIFA, because they have the Champions League, they have the Europa League, they have the European Championships. They just have more year-by-year things going on. So when FIFA proposed that, all the other organizations were like, no, we're not going to vote for it. There's kind of a rift right now between FIFA and UEFA, because FIFA is trying to make money on things that UEFA typically makes money on. Anyway, and like the Congress of FIFA was last week, and a bunch of European people straight up walked out of it like midway through the thing. So that's where things are between them. But
okay.
They're going to expand the World Cup, the men's and the women's World Cup. They're going from 32 teams to 48 teams. So that's going to make them more money than they normally make on the World Cup. But probably if you are FIFA, the thing you're going to do is try to invent a new thing that you could put the words World Cup on, and might potentially be able to make you money down the line. And
that's how we end up with this swollen version of the Club World
so
Cup.
So you'd like to have a Club World Cup. You'd like to have – you can't have another thing with national teams. People will get mad at you. You can try doing a thing with clubs. All the good teams are in Europe. All the best club teams are in Europe, so they already have their club tournament. But you can invent this tournament that is a quote-unquote World Cup featuring teams from around the world, knowing full well that the – most likely teams to win and the most profitable teams and the teams that will draw the most eyeballs are all already playing in a club competition every year in Europe. So that's the best I can see it. The way you end up with a tournament like this is you're trying to invent another thing with the words World Cup on it. And you just have to invite everyone from across the planet from all six confederations.
So, okay, so I get why the other soccer organizations are not maybe not enthused about this, because it's kind of like trying to claw away some of their revenue. How do clubs feel about this, and how do fans feel about this?
Well, the clubs for now are going along with it, and there's a pretty good reason for that, which is that FIFA is paying out I'm doing the Dr. Evil thing.
You're doing the thing. Yeah.
$1 billion in prize money for this tournament.
With a B.
With a B.
Billion.
The team that wins
the
tournament. Yes. Like, they're just throwing a huge chunk of cash at trying to make this thing happen. Like, the exact prize money payout is very, if you win the FIFA Club World Cup, your team could make up to $125 million, making the semifinal or making the finals, you could make $95 million. Every game you win in the group stage, they will pay you $2 million.
And these are for well capitalized, often extremely profitable clubs within their own ecosystems.
Yes. And it's also on top of just to pay in the tournament. So they split it. They split the billion into $400 million in just participation, just that you get for showing up.
Just for showing up.
And then $525 million for how far you go in the tournament. And you can sort of backtrack where they're getting this money. It's a two-step process here. They're giving out $1 billion in prize money for the tournament. they also incidentally received $1 billion for the TV rights from the streaming network DAZN, which
doesn't have an O in it anywhere, but yeah.
To this point in my life, I had avoided saying that out loud.
I'm sorry that I made you break your streak.
It's spelled D-A-Z-N. Yeah. And it's like a soccer service, and there's sort of this didn't go well because, like, it doesn't seem like there's $1 billion worth of interest in this thing necessarily, mm-hmm. and it's a for pay platform, and FIFA was like, we don't want you to do that, we want you to make it free, and it turns out in a lot of countries, DAZN, oh God, I just don't like it. is going to sublicense it out. So here in America, okay. a lot of the games will be on like TNT, and much like the previously mentioned NCAA tournament, I believe some of the games will in fact be on True TV, but I'm getting far away from the point. And then like slightly before DAZN agreed to pay FIFA $1 billion for the rights of this tournament, there was an investment of $1 billion by the Saudi Public Investment Fund into DAZN.
Okay.
So you can kind of track over a series of months, this $1 billion went from the Saudi Public Investment Fund to the previously mentioned streaming service of dubious nomenclature.
I feel like you're afraid to keep saying it for Beetlejuice reasons, but that's okay.
I don't want DAZN to come out of my phone. And
you said it again.
No! And then it gets distributed to these teams. So any concerns like you might have had about these teams not taking their seventh tournament of the year, and those concerns are very real, have kind of been squashed by the fact that you can, you know, you could go out and buy some players with the money you get from participating in this tournament.
This is not dissimilar to like some of the mid to lower tier bowl structure in college football, where it's like, well, why are you going to go play, you know, in Boise in December? And it's like, because there's money in it, because they're going to pay us to do this. That's, I'm not saying the Potato Bowl is necessarily an exact example of that, but like that sort of incentive structure. But this is that at a whole nother level.
Yeah, it's just an absurd, like, $125 million for winning a tournament that lasts a month is pretty nuts. And the question, though, is the next thing you asked was, you asked, how do the clubs feel about it? The clubs are like, they're Scrooge McDucking this. They're
Get
diving
that.
Into this tournament to the United States, and they're okay with it because they are receiving money for it. But the second thing you asked was, how do the fans feel about it? Obviously, it's TBD, but so far, more soccer means more line go up. But at this point, it's just really, really, really saturated sports calendar, especially with soccer. If Manchester City makes the final of this, which is entirely possible because they are allegedly a good soccer team from what I've heard, although they did not win any trophies this year. If they make it all the way to the last game, which is on July 15th, they will have been playing soccer for 354 days because they started their season last year on July 24th. There are players who have just been playing soccer all year long. Every soccer organization is simultaneously adding games, adding events. Like I said, the Champions League has expanded to become longer to include more games. National teams now play in this thing called the Nations League that kind of runs all throughout the season in addition to World Cup qualifying. And every organization realizes that the more soccer you play, the more money they can make. And so far, it feels like we haven't seen the end result of that. But it does raise the question of, are people around the world going to tune into this event with, you know, rapt attention? They've been tuning in with rapt attention for an entire year. And it's true. We managed to do it. I mean, obviously when the World Cup happens, when the European Championships happen, people will continue watching soccer into the summer. But this they took one of the last months on the quadrennial calendar, which is kind of quiet, and have now filled it with more soccer. And we will see how many people tune into DAZN for that.
We're going to take a quick break about talking about the ridiculousness of the Club World Cup to instead talk about something just as ridiculous, but in a positive way. See, the word can mean many things. That's right. I'm talking about the sheer amount of excellent clothing, hats, socks, stickers, sweatshirts, sweatpants, jackets, almost everything you can think of that you could put on one's person at homefieldapparel.com. I did the research because I care about accuracy. And to the best of my knowledge, unless they're hiding somewhere on the site, 48 states in the U.S. are represented by at least one school on homefieldapparel.com. The outliers, Alaska, which does not have a Division I school, I don't believe. I think they have two Division II schools, and Maine. And honestly, like, would you be surprised if in the next couple of weeks the Black Bears popped up? I wouldn't, because home field is always growing. Home field is always expanding what they offer, both into new schools and new offerings and within your school. Oh, look at this. Here are 8 new hats for your school. Oh, look, we're doing hockey jerseys, new jackets. Like, there's always something new and exciting to find at Home Field Apparel. And again, spans basically the entire United States. So you can, if you're feeling big city, big school, come on down. We got that for you. Small city, small school, we got that too. Again, you find all of these and more at homefieldapparel.com. Now, back to the episode. So the other part of the fan experience I'm curious about is, you know, you say a World Cup. And one of the first things I think of is ticket sales and how the World Cup ticket is very expensive, very hard to get. Like, consistently one of the things that it's like, okay, if you want to go to this, you're probably shelling out pretty good money. And it doesn't necessarily matter which match you're getting a ticket to. Is there, this is being hosted in the United States. I believe it's all basically across the whole country. Is that right?
We haven't even gotten to that part yet. This is being held. Is being held in the country that you and I are in right now.
Yes, right.
And if you and I wanted to go to one of these games, it would somehow be cheaper than you expected and more than you're probably willing to pay.
That seems like the worst place to be, truthfully.
let's look at I'm gonna open my ticket app right now, and just for you.
Okay.
Let's see. I believe, am I doxing you by saying you live in Nashville?
No, that's public information. So you can tell me what the games at JOTUS look like.
Yes, because there are games. I spelled it Vlub World Cup, so that's not off to a great start. They're very close together. Here in New York, these tickets have dropped into the 50s, and they're for things like Brazilian soccer team. They're for things like, I could get into Fluminense versus Al Ahly from Egypt for $55. Okay. What they're, sorry, this is awful audio. For you in Nashville, the games, I'm sorry to say, you're not getting the best bunch. I made a list of the worst games, and some of them some of them are in Nashville. If you wanted to go see Club León from Mexico, people will go to that, versus Esperance Sportive de Tunis from Tunisia, $47. So they're not doing a great job selling it. One thing I noticed is what FIFA is trying to do is trying to pay. I mean, think about it. People go to the World Cup from all across the world. How willing are people going to be? Is this event aimed at people flying from Tunisia, South Korea, Japan to see their teams, or is it aimed at selling it to people like us who already live in these cities? they have tried pairing the tickets with the opportunity to then purchase tickets for next year's World Cup. Because normally you have to...
Oh, that's clever.
Normally you have to win a lottery of some sort to get selected for your team's games.
Yeah, like Augusta National works this way. Wimbledon works this way, yeah.
So they've announced... You get, when these two packages were announced, people were like, well, the ticket sales must not be going well because they're trying to, like, pawn them off in these packages. One of them is you have to attend three games and you will get a, like, you personally have to attend them. The other one, and this is the most nuts arrangement I've ever seen, is they'll give you tickets to 20 Club World Cup games. And if you attend, you or a person that you can verify that you know attends all 20 of those games, it's called a super ticket pack. You can then you can then purchase a World Cup game next year. The thing is, there are only 22 days on which the Club World Cup is being played.
I mean, but listen, you are the expert on.
I would not do this. I would not go from Seattle to Cincinnati to Nashville to Orlando see some of these games. I mean, okay. It's like logistically difficult for you to get to 20 games in 22 separate days. And if you don't pull it off, it's like sort of like they're challenging me, which I don't like, because part of me is like, yes, what if I did it?
What if I did it?
I could get into the World Cup next year. Mm-hmm. I will, and a ragtag bunch of people who I can personally verify to FIFA that I know can pull this off. But I don't think I'm going to give it a shot, unfortunately. It's also like I said, I could just, it seems like I could just buy a ticket to one of these games for like $50 or so, which again, more expensive than I'd like it to be, but probably less expensive than they were hoping. But they are really hoping that you want those World Cup tickets badly enough to pull this off. They are acknowledging that this is the lesser of the two, like, things. Like, pretty, I mean, everyone knows that.
None of what you're describing is, there is organic interest in filling up these stadiums, buying up all these tickets for this event. And that's like what we haven't even in the background of this. You've pointed out the World Cup is a travel event in the same way that the Olympics are. And like holding this in the United States at this point in time where you're asking international audiences to come to the United States, like that's its whole separate thing that's challenging at this point. But I think it, at the very least, is reflective of like, okay, this is not necessarily something that is being met with incredible enthusiasm from potential ticket holders. So
here's my list of the worst games in the Club World Cup. And think of this is like FIFA has to hold these games in order to justify also having Real Madrid and Manchester City. Like those teams are all, those teams that you know, those name brands, Chelsea, PSG, those teams are already playing in a European club competition.
So the conceit only works if you have this level of like, well, we're inviting this club from this lesser league to come play.
So we're starting with Ulsan HD from the South Korean League versus the Mamelodi Sundowns in Orlando. That's from South Africa. And like, okay. I just don't know how many people from either of those two places live in Orlando. It doesn't seem like it's a big draw. River Plate from Argentina versus the Urawa Red Dragons at the Seattle Seahawks Stadium. There will be several empty seats. I just looked it up on StubHub, and we can get in there for $23.
Okay, good.
And the number one for me is Al Ain, which finished fifth in the UAE this year, versus Wydad Casablanca, which finished third in Morocco, at Audi Field in Washington, D.C. The MLS stadiums. Clearly, they've put some of the lesser interest matchups in the MLS stadiums as opposed to the NFL stadiums, But if one of the whole points of this event is that it's a prep for the World Cup, which is not being held in those stadiums, it's a little confusing.
It doesn't totally fill.
Yeah. Only five of the venues that are being used at the Club World Cup are actually even World Cup venues. So it's like the whole premise of it as a World Cup test event just doesn't fly.
I want to go back very briefly to Lyon, and we've sort of like, I don't think we've gotten fully into like how qualifying works, and I know that's a complicated subject in many soccer tournaments, so this is not necessarily a unique issue, but Lyon was part of a very particular problem with the Club World Cup, and I was wondering if you could walk us through like the wrinkle that exists here that doesn't exist in the men's or women's World Cup.
Yeah, this is the second most controversial. I think it's the most sensible of the two controversies here, but it's also the one that probably made the most people mad. Oh yeah, I said that. Wow. Okay, sorry. I said earlier Club Lyon because that's what it was listed as on the ticket site. But yes, they're not going to be participating right. Because of this controversy where two teams from Liga MX, Liga MX, the Mexican league, are owned by the same person, the same entity. And the rules are that you can only have one. And there's sort of a logic behind that, and it exists in other club competitions. You don't want someone like, I don't know, shifting players around between their two teams or somehow manipulating things in that way. These two teams are both owned by the same Mexican business person, Lyon and Pachuca, and both of them qualified. And I don't actually know how they decided which of the two got in. I should have looked into that. But FIFA decided that Lyon would have to go because they decided these teams like weren't independent enough. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's going to be a one-game playoff between LAFC and Club America, which is another Mexican team, for that final spot. And this is something that was like up for grabs like into the last few weeks of the tournament. It seemed like some people felt it was arbitrary. I know that in Europe, sometimes people get away with like putting one of the teams into a blind trust or something like that. And one of the like funny wrinkles was James Rodriguez, who, if you followed soccer for a while, you may remember him performing very well in the World Cup, signed with Lyon a few months ago, almost explicitly to play in the Club World Cup, which it feels like is exactly the sort of thing FIFA would want to happen. You know, like we right. decided to have this event. It convinced this talented player and this club money to spend money yep. on a player specifically to be in this event to win big, and a player who wanted to showcase on this stage. So he signed with them, and then later they found out that he's not going to be able to play in the World Cup, because the team isn't playing, and he might end up actually transferring to Pachuca, which is sort of exactly the type of thing that you were sort of hoping to avoid.
The single ownership rule is supposed to prevent.
For me, the sillier thing is the fact that Inter Miami is going to be in the tournament.
Okay, the club Leo Messi plays for.
Yes. I don't know if you guys knew about this Lionel Messi figure, but he's got a lot of followers on Facebook. He's a big deal of sorts. And basically, ever since the original Club World Cup had a host nation entry, a team from the country hosting is allowed to participate even if they haven't won the UEFA Champions League or any of the other things to get you in. And that carried over into this World Cup. They decided that one of the 32 spots would be reserved for the host nation to have a team from their league to play in, so the fans could cheer on for their home country's team. Of course, people from around the country would love to see some random MLS team from across the country that they haven't heard of. However, FIFA never specifically said what they were going to use to define how the host nation gets a team in. They kind of left that up for grabs. And as the Club World Cup got closer and closer, people were asking them, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by a team from the host nation? They were like, we will reveal that at a later date. And basically, the day that Inter Miami clinched the best regular season record last year, FIFA is like, it's official. Inter Miami has earned the requirement for the FIFA Club World Cup. And they, like, you know, acted as if this was something that they had always planned to do. As soon as they got the best regular season record, it's called the Supporters' Shield in MLS parlance. But the thing about MLS, which makes it different from a lot of European leagues, is they also have a knockout round to win the league championship. You don't win the league championship by having
a more American-style playoff.
Yes, yes. And the playoffs start, and Inter Miami just instantly eats shit. Like, first round loses best 2 out of 3 series against Atlanta United. And it almost, like, FIFA had smartly stepped in the 1 week in between them clinching the regular season title and just getting their ass kicked in the playoffs by Atlanta, like, and made sure that Messi was going to be in this tournament, even though most American fans would say that last year's MLS champion was the LA Galaxy, the team that won the league in the MLS Cup playoffs. Like,
are the Galaxy also playing in the Club World Cup?
They are not. They are not in the Club World Cup. They did not get one of the spots. The three teams from the U.S., the 2.5 teams from the U.S. are Inter Miami, the Seattle Sounders, who won the CONCACAF Champions League, and potentially LAFC, because they're in that playoff against Club America, which, like, is honestly a pretty big deal for the people who own the club. This is something I just found out. Like, for most of the players in all of these leagues are going to be excited to play because presumably they will receive pay for playing in these massively expensive games. But the MLS is a salary cap league. And at some point when they were knocking out the CBA, they were like, if your team plays in some other tournament, your players can only make an additional $1 million from the tournament. No matter what that is, because they didn't expect someone to invent a Club World Cup where it's like you make
and dump $1 billion. Yeah.
So they're kind of getting screwed, the MLS players, by that random clause. So there's just a lot of things that haven't been thought out here or described in detail, because again, 3 years ago they were just playing the normal version of this event that has existed for decades, and then in 2023. They announced they were going to change everything, host this here, string it together, come up with a format, come up with, you know, stadiums. We'll host it in America because they're already hosting the World Cup. And it you just keep on seeing, like, the thing they haven't thought about popping up. And they didn't think about the fact that maybe people in Orlando won't want to see a team from South Africa playing a team from South Korea. They didn't think about how are we going to decide which teams get into the tournament. And the one thing they did think about was we can potentially profit down the line from having another thing that says the word World Cup on it, and we are going to throw money at that until it works.
Okay. The other thing that sort of sticks in the back of my head is that most of the time when you have international competitions like this, whether it's the World Cup or the Olympics or whatever, they don't line up neatly with the calendar of what I'll say are, like, the feeder leagues, the leagues from which these clubs usually play or these players usually participate. Is that a problem here? Like, is this causing problems with, like, the rest of the soccer calendar that was made never assuming that this thing would exist in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be happening in the United States at the same time that the MLS season is going to continue going on, and and at the same time that the Gold Cup, which is the North American national team competition, is going to be happening. So there's going to be these three separate. There's still some European World Cup qualification games that are going to be happening at the same time as this. There's sort of like people waiting to see whether the players for these best clubs are going to be released and play in this big tournament, as opposed to they have a duty or responsibility with their national teams. Normally these things, like something that requires teams from across the world, has to be planned out 7, 8, 10 years ahead of time. And instead they're holding at the same time. I'm not sure how many people from across the world are going to be like, they're infringing upon the Gold Cup, because the Gold Cup doesn't have a lot of status, neither did the Club World Cup. And then they're just kind of astroturfing it over all of this. I think most of the fields have natural grass, but
okay. So this is the Club World Cup as we understand that it will be as it rolls out this summer. Do you have any sense? I'm going to ask you to predict the future a little bit. Like, what is going to be? Is this how it's just going to be going forward? Is there any sense of like what this is going to be in the future? Like, will this be a thing that they sort of take one shot at and be like, boy, people didn't show up and DAZN doesn't have another $1 billion for us, so like what happens to the Club World Cup after this? Is there any sort of sense of like what the scenarios look like?
Like, they haven't announced where the next one will be.
Well, are they going to do the thing where they just keep piggybacking it onto the World Cup host?
That's sort of what you'd imagine. Like, that's the way that things have gone in the past. Like, they would typically always hold some other tournament in that country a year ahead of time. But it feels like if the United States, with all of these pre-existing stadiums, with a huge population, I assume there's flights here from most parts of the world. Like, if this thing doesn't fly here, it's kind of weird to imagine that you would hold a month-long sprawling tournament in 4 years just because it's where you're hosting the next World Cup. But at the same time, I just feel like FIFA is going to kind of needs another thing existentially. Like, they feel that they need to create another reason for FIFA to make money. Like, that's what FIFA does. They sit back and they try and figure out ways to make more money. And right now this is the one they've settled on. But I think more broadly, it's just like, you're going to see continually, not just in soccer, in any sport, these events are so profitable that we're just going to continue to see like different organizations hurling together ways to like try and squeeze more games in. And it might come into conflict with your domestic league. It might come into conflict with the international championship that people love. But there's this need to keep producing more and more that no one seems to have a good answer for. And it's come out more clumsily than ever with the Club World Cup.
So what you're saying is eventually we'll be looking at the spring and fall Olympic Games to go with the summer winter pairing.
Because there was no one sitting there asking who is the best club in the world, you know? That question was unasked
and there's a system that largely answers that question.
Yes, that's the thing. There was an event that already did that. You know, the Champions League final will happen. Inter Milan, I'm really outing myself as a guy who forgot one of the two team names. It's PSG. I didn't look that up. I was looking at you the whole time. They're both going to play in the Champions League final, and then they're going to fly to America, and they're going to play in another tournament to decide which one of them is better. And sure, that's a thing you already have in soccer. You know, each nation has its domestic leagues, and then there's the continental competitions, and then there's the cups. But there's exactly one entity that whose purposes this served, and it's hard to imagine they'll go away from that because they keep wanting to find more money.
All right, I'm going to end with a personal question, if that's okay. One of your professional traits is that you enjoy and seek out the lesser-known sports and sports events around the world. So I have to ask you directly, if only out of professional curiosity, are you going to be watching the Club World Cup?
Well, I've already established that I'm scared of DAZN. I don't want to enter DAZN. It's like on this, because I like things that are interesting and you have to kind of work for them. And there's this real, it's answering a question that exists. And people may not be paying attention to this sport. And I like finding something out there. You know, here's a world championship in a sport you were. I found the.
You're saying club soccer is not a niche sport, I think.
I think what I'm trying to say is it's just like so obviously being done to be as big as possible.
Okay.
That it doesn't feel like it fits into that niche of like this is an undiscovered event. They are trying to replicate the world's most popular sporting events without being able to replicate the world's most popular sporting event. The idea here is to make the second World Cup, and you can't do that. That thing exists, it's magical, and you tried to double the amount of World Cups that exist, and they told you, and the other confederation said no. So this was their backup plan, and it's shoddy, and they haven't figured out all the details, and the players are going to be dead tired, and they're going to show up because it's going to pay them money. And that doesn't feel to me like, you know, you're discovering something cool and interesting that's happening. I might tune in just to see like when the club from New Zealand plays the club from, you know, Tunisia and see what happens there. But we know that at the end of this, it's probably going to be two teams from Europe that just played in another competition for teams from Europe.
I mean, the good news is Orlando, Nashville, a lot of these cities, famously comfortable in June outside. Super, super pleasant.
I'm glad we're showing the world our, maybe not hospitality, but humidity.
That's right, our sweatiest selves.
Okay, let's do a little housekeeping to wrap this episode up. Obviously, we recorded that with Roger a few weeks ago. So first off, let's note, yep, PSG sure did win the Champions League final pretty decisively, so no question marks there. On the topic of James Rodriguez, actually ineligible to play in the Club World Cup because Leon was the second team that he played for this season. FIFA regulations say nobody can participate for more than two clubs in a season. So even if somebody wanted to pick him up, not an option at this point. That play-in game, LAFC ended up winning that in the 115th minute to get the final spot, formerly occupied by Leon, in the Club World Cup. The MLS Players Association and the league are negotiating a possible amendment to their collective bargaining agreement to get players a bigger chunk of what those three MLS clubs participating in this tournament will earn. But as of this recording, there is not a lot of progress publicly to talk about. Lastly, on June 4th, The Athletic reported that tens of thousands of unsold tickets remained for the opening match of the Club World Cup tournament featuring Inter Miami and Al Ahly. Tickets at that point were down to $55. And I can tell you, as of June 9th, when I'm recording this, if you want to go to one of the matches here in Nashville, Tennessee, you can still get in for a very, very reasonable price. Thanks again to Roger for joining us. this week. Thank you to Michael Serber. This has been Phantom Island presented by Home Field Apparel. As always, give us a 5-star rating in your podcast platform of choice or a review. Tell a friend. Go talk about us on the internet, positive or negative. Well, maybe just positive. Or middle? I'll take middle. Okay, bye.